Good evening. Shalom, everyone. Shalom. We have guests from all over New York. Welcome, welcome. We're about to start. This week's portion is Vayeshev. And I just want you to know, next week we're not here. It's Hanukkah. And afterwards, there's a long vacation, semester, exams, chofesh, Jewish holidays, Christian holidays. We will not continue this year here. And we will inform, we'll let you know where and when exactly you will be able to come and listen. But it's always live and broadcasted live and shared everywhere. YU Torah, my Facebook, YouTube, etc., etc. So be in touch. I want to thank Yoshua Siskin for the great translation. Karen Danieli, they're sponsoring this live shiur. People can watch us here also in Israel, although it's quite late in Israel now. Of course, I want to thank Uri Ristrech for recording and organizing everything. And I also encourage you to subscribe to join the daily WhatsApp for those who asked me where will we be next week and in a month and in 2 months and when is the next lecture in Boston or Memphis. So if you will join the daily WhatsApp, I'll show the number here afterwards. You will be able to know and follow and be everywhere, Bezrat Hashem. I also want to thank Michal Haas for all the great help and also the great pizza. You're more than welcome to take, no problem. Yeah, we can't smell it, you know. The video doesn't, you know, show the smell, but yeah, they're great pizzas here. Okay, let's start. Vayeshev basically is, the plot is quite, you know, well known. We remember it all by heart since we were like 3 or 4 years old. That's why Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, that's his Yortzeit today, Yud Tet Kislev, also a well-known day in the Hasidic movement. We'll discuss it later. But Rav Neria, one of the Zionist religious leaders of Israel, passed away today, 23 years ago. And he, I would say, declares, he asks us, before we start reading Parashat Vayeshev, he asks us to pay attention to something that might be like misleading us. Since we already heard the Torah portions of Yosef's story in the past, Shamanu Parashiyot Ele Be'avar, we cannot learn and absorb them as we would if we were hearing them for the first time, right? We were not, there's no tension, no spoiler alerts, you know, at the end of the day, the brothers and Yosef will hug and unite again. So we're not really, you know, we don't really feel like it's really happening now. We're not really worried about Yosef. We know the end of the story, continues Rav Neria, and so the tragic tale of the sale of Yosef by his brothers is not shocking. That's really shocking, and to tell you the truth, it's not shocking, you know, honestly. But we need to learn every parasha anew in order to experience what happens as if we were there, to feel what Yaakov and his sons felt at the story actually unfolded, and then we will see the entire parasha in a different light and with a deeper understanding. Be'or acher ve'amok, says Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria. We will try. This parasha, that's a very fundamental, basic story. We know Rav Avigdor Nevenzel explains usually that we have the ultimate sin between God and man and God, which is Ergel HaZahav, the golden calf, of course, and we have the ultimate sin between Ben Adam LeChavero, between a man and, you know, his fellow brother, and this happens this week. Mechirat Yosef, the brothers sold Yosef to the Egyptians, and this is, once again, a very fundamental sin. We should pay attention. We should really read carefully every detail there in order to, in a way, not do it again. And we will today focus on two figures. We'll discuss two figures. One is Yosef, obviously, and his journey throughout the parasha. But the second hero here, and I'm ashamed to say, until I prepared this year, I never really learned and thought about his mission here, about his role. The second figure is Yehuda and his journey and his tikkun. Now, let's begin with Yosef. And what happens to him, once again, it's not his process, it's our process. I think we can learn a lot from reading about his journey. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv be'eretz Knan. Yaakov dwelt in Knan. And then the parasha starts, Ele toldot Yaakov, Yosef ben 17 shana. These are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef. And the parasha starts to elaborate about Yosef, how old he was, what exactly did he do. And at the end of this pasuk, Vayaveh Yosef et dibatam shel ha'achim, ra'ah el avihem. And Yosef brought evil tales, evil reports, dibara'a, about them to his father. And Rashi explains, everything he could tell about them that was negative, he told. Everything. Kol ra'a shaya ro'e be'echav haya magid le'aviv. Anything, any evil he saw in his brothers, the sons of Leah, he would tell his father. Kol ma shehaya yachol ledaber bahem ra'a, haya mesaper. Whatever evil he could tell about them, he told. He was searching for bad things, fichut damim, gilui arayot, avodah zara, everything they did. There are a lot of mefarshim, they all explain how he found, you know, bad details, negative things, to run back to his father and tell them, they did this, they did that. Just today, a letter was published in Israel, written by Rabbi Gershon Edelstein, the head of Ponovitch Yeshiva. And Rabbi Gershon Edelstein wrote it, according to, there was a request for a group of students that asked him, which chizuk should we do? What should we do in order to strengthen ourselves after the tragic death of Yitzhak Weiss? Yitzhak Weiss was a young father in Bnei Brak, had only one son. His son, 5 months old, passed away suddenly. And during the Shiva, and I'm sure here in the States, some of you heard about this tragedy, while he was sitting Shiva, he also passed away out of really sorrow. He was a healthy man, Yitzhak Weiss and Itzik. And Rabbi Edelstein writes to his friends, what are you supposed to do now as chizuk? And he says, and I think it's really surprising to we know it, like it's obvious, but hearing it, you know, from such a gadol, from such a righteous person, and that's the basic element, I think, of Judaism, of our life. Uva'asher etzonchem hatov, likboa ve'litalot be'ezeh chizuk, he writes, you want, and it's good that you want to find a certain chizuk. Yesh davar ikari shenogea lema'aseh me'od, there's something fundamental, really, practical, tachlis, lehizaher, שלא לדבר דברי ביקורת על מישהו ואפילו במחשבה. Should pay attention carefully, be careful, be aware. Do not say any criticism about anyone and even in one's mind. Not only בדיבור, אפילו במחשבה. ואדרבה, צריך לדון את כל האדם לכף זכות. To judge our fellow friend favorably, to see the כף זכות, to work hard in order to see it in the positive, brighter way. The interpretation of what we see should be kaf zchut. This was published this morning in Israel, and I think it's really relevant. When we read once again our parasha, we were always sent to galut, to exile, because of Lashon Hara, because our society was full of Lashon Hara, of dibara'a, of bringing bad reports about one another, going, sharing them, spreading them around. Now, the parasha continues. It's not only dibara'a. There's the Kutonet Pasim, the coat, the beautiful coat. There's the dreams, Yosef dreams and shares his heroic dreams with everyone. Of course, they hate him and they're jealous and they're envy. We can see all these words here. Vayir'u echav oto, ki oto ahav avihem mikol echav. Vayisne'u oto, they hated him. Lo yachlu dabro l'shalom, they couldn't even say hello, they couldn't even talk to him, greet him. And he continues dreaming, and they continue hating him. Vayosifu od senoto, vayosifu od senoto, vayekan ubo, they also envied him. Everything here is really messed up. It's really, we see the, all the hints are here, and then the tragedy really occurs. But what happens is, while they continue hating, Yosef, in a way, transforms, he changes. And we see this specific point, you know, when you can see how his life are different from that moment on. What happens is, Vayimtzeehu ish, there are all these like angels, messengers throughout Sefer Bereshit. Last week, Yaakov was fighting with this ish, angel, symbolic person. He had a mission, this person, fighting with Yaakov Avinu, changing his name to Israel. And now it's Yosef. There's this ish, a man, we don't know who he is, finds him, and he asks him, Matevakesh, what do you want? What are you seeking? What are you looking for? And this moment when it changes Yosef. I mean, the Kotzke Rebbe, many commentators, I saw it in a book of Rabbi Dov Beryl Wine. He writes, this moment when someone comes to you and asks, what do you want? What is your desire? Who are you? Where do you go? What is your direction? What is the destination? What is the goal of everything? Matt Vakesh, this moment, it's like, you know, it strikes itself in a minute, he thinks, and he answers a beautiful answer. Became a famous pasuk, a famous song, a famous quote. Et achai anochi mevakesh. My brothers, I want them. I'm seeking for them. I'm looking for them. I am looking for my brothers. Et achai anochi mevakesh. It's a weird answer. Yosef does not mention any specific location. You know, Matt, where do you go? I'll help you. They're there. They're here. North, west, east. Go to the right, to the left. No, no, no. Yosef just says, okay, et achai anochi mevakesh. Literally, I want them. I want their. I want them to love me. I want their environment, their brotherhood. Et achai anochi mevakesh. There's sometimes in our life there are these messengers. We should once again pay attention and be see these signs, these hints that are sent to us. Rabbi Beryl Wine, when he explains this beautiful quote, et achai anochi mevakesh, or ma tevakesh, what do you want? He tells about a member of his synagogue, his community, that once he was traveling one night to a concert with a friend, and the police stopped their car and blocked the street. And the driver became upset, says Rabbi Wine. And this large police officer approached him and explained, I'm sorry we blocked the street. Tonight is Yom Kippur, and we are blocking the street because the Jews in this neighborhood are going to the Kol Nidre prayer. We will open the street shortly. The driver was in shock because he had no idea it was Yom Kippur. And this incident changed his life. Okay, this is a moment of what are you looking for? Mate vakesh, mieta, who are you? Et achai anochi mevakesh. And we need to notice the message that are, sent into the path we take through life. There are angels, there are messengers in human form. And it's our job, it's our task, mission, to notice them and take, you know, heed of their messages. Now, Yosef really understands the message. Here's, you know, we hear his answer. I'm looking for my brother, but he needs, and once again, this mutual understanding. Okay, this brotherly love, this unity, this peace. Okay, that's what he wants from now on. He changed, and from here on, Yosef is transformed into, I would say, a model of coping with the distressful situations, rising to meet the challenges they present, you know, from being thrown to the bottom of a pit to becoming the prince of Egypt. And this is not only, I would say, what he does is like a, I would say, a shiur, a lesson to all of us, okay? The minute he understands something here has changed, he has a mission. Let's see four different tests, okay, of Yosef, four different challenges. And it's, you just read the parasha and see how each time it's even harder for him, and each time how he prevails, he even reaches a higher level each time. The first time happens the minute he goes to Mitzrayim. Yosef hurad Mitzrayim, vaikneu Potifar saris Paro. Yes, he's taken to the house of Potifar. And listen to this. Vayehi Hashem et Yosef. Hashem was with him. Vayehi ish matzliach. He was a successful man. By the way, ish matzliach, it is still a well-known phrase in Israel, in Hebrew, up until today. Ish matzliach. Every morning you read the news, you know, financial parts of the daily newspaper. Ish matzliach, a successful man. This is something you can use because a lot of the terms, don't quote it when you go to Israel, but it's too, you know, biblical Hebrew. But ish matzliach, Yosef is an ish matzliach. He's a successful man. And vayara donav ki Hashem ito. His master sees Hashem is with him. V'chol asher hu oseh, everything he does, Hashem matzliach beyado. Once again, it is successful because of Hashem. Vayevarech Hashem et bet haMitzri bigal Yosef, the house of Paro is blessed because Potiphar is blessed because of Yosef. Vayehi birkat Hashem bechol asher yesh lo babayit. We see a man who is really devoted, really committed, really represents his Jewish identity, and despite or maybe because of all these quotes about him, all these facts, he is very, very successful. These verses raise a familiar question. We all face it. Is it possible to combine success at work in the outside world, okay, foreign culture, with a strong Jewish identity? And Yosef's answer is, yes, of course. I am successful because of my Jewish identity, okay? I think it's the perfect timing, Hanukkah, the perfect place, Manhattan, New York, to ask this question. How can we all be successful men, successful women, when we go out from this beautiful bubble called Stern College, okay? The world out there is a little bit different, slightly. So how do we do it? And how is Yosef so connected to his values? And Rashi says, Yosef was saying Hashem's name all the time. Every person who met him, they were Egyptians, heard Baruch Hashem, Be'ezrat Hashem. The name of Hashem was frequently in his mouth. Shem Shamayim Shagur Al Piv. He's not ashamed. He's proud. He expresses it out loud. Rashi also noticed that he whispers when he comes in and whispers when he goes out. Every time he had a mission, he whispers, he davens, he prays, when he goes in and when he goes out. In other words, Yosef was really praised throughout the day, okay? In the course of his work, not forgetting for a moment where he comes from and who he is. He prepares Egypt, you know. In a few generations, we will all be there. All of our ancestors will have to go through this hard exile in Egypt and go out from there, Be'ezrat Hashem, in the future. He prepares, I would say, the path for us. And this is how you do it. He really, as a role model, think of all the kids who grew up in Egypt. Their mothers told them about Yosef HaTzadik. He was here, the first one here, and he showed us the way. Now, he really achieves great success because he's so connected to his culture. And here in the States, I was like, you know, it's my first year here. First Halloween, first Thanksgiving, and now first Christmas, and Lehavdil first Chanukah. And whenever you look, maybe you are familiar with this, maybe you got used to the fact that wherever you look here, you're part of a Christmas party, wherever you go, okay? It's not my party, but it's like this continent's party. They're all celebrating. My kids are asking me every day, wherever I go, I took a few pictures this week, wherever you go, you see Christmas trees. I think here, when I entered this place, it was the first time I entered a building in New York, and I didn't see a Christmas tree at the entrance. Wherever you go, sometimes there is a small Chanukiah, sometimes it's a commercial. You just want to fly, you know, from one place to the other. But all of the commercials, it could be Coca-Cola, it could be anything, Target, Macy's, Costco, everywhere you go, do you have something that has to do something with the holiday? And unfortunately, also in Israel, friends of ours took a few pictures, also in malls in Israel, it became, unfortunately, very, very popular. And once again, I think it's our mission, our role, to be ish matzliach, to be connected, to be really successful, but, you know, to reach the highest level, but to not forget who we are and where we came from. That's the first test. The second one is much harder, a famous test. Also a symbolic, I would say, story about our connection. It's not only the cultural connection, that's sometimes easy. The personal connection, okay? Assimilation. Your reaction to Potiphar's wife when she tries to seduce him became once again a model, demonstrates his faith, his values, how committed he is. He addresses Potiphar's wife as follows. That's his answer. Once again, it became a very famous pasuk. Ve'ech aaseh, e'aseh, hara'a hagdola hazot, v'chatati le'elokim. Now, how can I commit this great evil and sin against God? It's not you, it's not me, it's Hashem. He does not forget, even there, he does not forget who he is. And the culture surrounds him. He has, by the way, all the excuses, all the reasons to forget. They throw him, they sold him, he probably thinks that they all forgot about him. They think he's dead already, or they don't even care. They hated him. We just read these awful descriptions. Why is he so connected still? So many people live the religious community environment, and then they have awful stories to share, usually on the news. They go out there, this rebbe did this, this rebbetzin did this, in high school they did this, in yeshiva they did this. Some of the stories are awful, some of them must be, you know, taken care of. But still, Yosef has the hardest story. He can really go out there and, you know, how do you call it, OTD, off the derech. He can go and, you know, share his stories about what these frum people did, oh, this Orthodox society. He can go everywhere in Egypt, you know, tell his story. But he does not forget, it's not the society, it's not the social thing, it's Hashem directly, and he is connected to him. And you see it, many kids were really off the derech because they're mad at the teacher, parent, neighbor, and sometimes they're right. They forget that it's not the connection to the neighbor, it's the connection to Hashem directly to him. And Yosef does not forget it, okay? Although he is really, I guess, frustrated, he's really connected directly to Hashem. And when he refuses, when he says no, he thinks about his father. That's the Midrash. Be'ota sha'a, in this specific, at that moment, his father's image, Dmut Dyukano shel Aviv, his father's image appeared to him in a window and said to him, Yosef, in the future your brother's name will be inscribed on the ephod, you know, the vest of the high priest, and your name will be among them. Do you want your name to be erased from among theirs? That's one question in the Talmud Bavli. Okay? In the future, don't you want to be a part of this huge nation, huge mission of our mutual future? He sees Dmut Dyukano shel Aviv, the image, the vision, the face of his father. The real, I always think about it as a mother. We do not educate them when we're there with them, telling them, do this, don't do this, no. Oh, I don't, yes. We really educate them when we're not there. When they are reminded of us, of our values, that's when we really educate our kids. Dmut Dyukano shel Aviv. That's, now I get nervous. What is my Dmut Dyukan? Yaakov Avinu had a Dmut Dyukan. We should create a Dmut Dyukan, an image, something to look up to, you know. So that's one thing Yosef sees. But the Yerushalmi, Talmud, adds another beautiful description. He also saw ve'af ikunin shel Rachel imo ra'a. He also saw the image of Rachel, his mother. When he sees Yaakov and Rachel, he cannot sin. It's a deep message, okay? He was really connected to his parents. And basically, once again, he reaches a higher level. But I think the next mission is even harder for him, for all of us. Yosef is in jail. Yosef is in prison. Once again, he's a tzaddik, but he arrives in the Egyptian prison. Just think about it, without having committed any crime. He didn't do anything. Now he has, once again, every reason in the world to close himself off, to isolate himself, to be sad, to be really depressed, you know, and to be, I would say, preoccupied solely with himself. He really does not need to pay attention to anyone around him. He really could talk to himself, how miserable I am, what happened to me, Hashem helped me, but please help me get out of here. I didn't do anything, I'm innocent, they're all these Egyptians. He does not choose this attitude, no. Different approach, completely. Notice, you know, the description of what happens next, very surprising response, okay? Two ministers of Paro are also thrown into prison alongside him. Vayavo vayachlemu chalom shnehem. Ish chalomo belaila echad. Ish kefitron chalomo hamashke vaofe asher lemelech mitzrayim. They both were dreaming strange, peculiar dreams. They had no idea what is the explanation of the dream. Vayavo, they don't go to Yosef and tell him. Think of it, a Hebrew Jewish prisoner, who pays attention to him? But he pays attention to them, and this is the big surprise. Vayavo elehem Yosef baboker, vayar otam veinam zoafim. He comes, Yosef came to them in the morning, and he saw them, and behold, they were troubled. And he asked Paro's ministers, who were with him in the prison of his master's house, saying, why are your faces sad today? Madua fnechem ra'im hayom. Four words in Hebrew, perfect solution for so many problems we're facing. Think about it. Once again, they didn't come to him. He had all the excuses to sit like this. He saw, Madua pnechem ra'im ayom. This morning, he saw their face are different and are much, I would say, like something is said, something is strange there. We can learn from that that every morning he was looking at their face, right? Their faces, because Madua pnechem ra'im hayom. I checked etmol, I checked yesterday, I will check tomorrow, I'll check machar. I'm checking hayom, I checked today, now I check it. Every day he paid attention, and today he sees the dream, you know, on their face. You can see they're troubled, they're confused. This curiosity, this empathy, this caring toward someone who is a stranger brings Geula to the world. Think about it. He explains, solves, you know, interprets, finds like an explanation to their dream, okay? And then what? After he explains them the meaning of the dream, what happens? Okay, so they are released. One of them is being killed. The other one remembers Yosef. And months later, Paro has a very weird dream. He doesn't understand the meaning of the dream. So this minister remembers of, oh, there's a Jewish prisoner in prison. He can help you out. And they ran and take Yosef out from the small cell, brings him to Paro. And of course he helps Paro. He becomes one of the supreme people in Paro's palace. And when his brothers will be hungry and come to Egypt and ask for food, he will be able to save them. And eventually the whole story of Yetziat Mitzrayim will succeed because of this simple question. Madua pnechem ra'im ayom. The wheels of the Geula, you know, everything starts, the mechanism starts here. Once again, Yosef shows us how can you have sensitivity toward others, paying attention to whoever is by your side, concern for others. And I think today, our mission to pay attention becomes much harder, much more challenging. Yoni Shlomon is an Israeli artist, and he drew this beautiful, beautiful picture of the Mashiach who comes already. He's here. Here's the white horse, the white donkey, Chamor Alavan. But we are all so concentrated. I think today it was even harder to pay attention to their face, because who watches, who looks at someone else's face? I'm on Facebook, not on faces, you know, human faces. So think in his picture, he shows how we're all so concentrated in the we're inside the screen. We can't even pay attention to someone else. Yosef teaches us here, pay attention, look, be aware to what's going on around you. That leads him to the final test, to this circle of tikkun is now really closed, because sometimes it's much easier, you know, to be nice to a foreign prisoner than to be nice to your brother, biological brother of your own family. We know it. Sometimes it's easier out there than in here. So we finished Yosef's rise to power, but when will we know that this story is really over? You know, we still have this fight, this conflict with his brothers. It's very nice. The first three tests, they don't help us to really solve the whole family problem here. Only in Parashat Vayigash will we see, will we read the following, and then we can really see how everything is solved. They're really afraid after Yaakov passed away. The brothers, they feel now Yosef will, you know, be mad at them, and because Yaakov is not here anymore. But he tells them in such an open, positive, beautiful way. Vayomer Yosef Elechav, Yosef said to his brothers, Kshu, please come closer to me. And they drew closer. And he said, I am your brother Yosef, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not be sad, and let it not trouble you that you sold me here. For it was to preserve life that God sent me before you. And in Hebrew, beautiful, beautiful Hebrew. Ki lemichya shelachani elokim lifnechem. Don't be mad, don't be sad. You didn't do, in a way, he even tells them here, I didn't tell Dad anything. Yaakov doesn't know. I forgot. I don't care. Lemichya shelachani elokim lifnechem. It was a part of a huge plan. Hashem planned to send me here to be lemichya, okay? To help you out here, to help you live here in Egypt, okay? Now notice, this is dibah tova, good reports, good news. We started with Dibara. He was searching everywhere just to find bad things about him. Now he works really hard to find good things about their behavior. כן? למחיה שלחני אלוקים, Hashem sent me here in a positive way. I don't blame you. I'm not mad. I'm not jealous. I'm not, you know, I don't want any revenge. That's a much higher level, you know, than what we read at the beginning of this parasha. Okay? The circle, I would say, has closed. The tikkun of Yosef character, you know, transformation is complete. And brotherly love returns. I am looking for my brothers, and they finally arrive. He really found them. That's the story of Yosef. I think once again, I think these four tests are extremely relevant today. And we should really, there are a lot of commentators. We can really elaborate a lot. But that's the basic, you know, journey of Yosef. Now, I want to tell you, this week, I was in Memphis. And I didn't plan to do anything special in Memphis. Assuming there is something special to do in Memphis, I don't know. Anyway, I was there for lectures with the great Baron Hirsch community. They invited me there, and we visited all the Jewish schools, and all of them, two of them, and they have two. And it was really, really inspiring to see a small community. You know, usually when I travel, I see, like, you know, the big shuls, the famous communities. It was the first time, how they told me, it's your first time in real America. So it was my first time in real America. But then at the end, we had on the way to the airport, I asked them to show me the place where Martin Luther King was murdered. You know, the assassination took place in Memphis. The leader, Martin Luther King, was killed there in a hotel. Room 306, they still preserve that. You can still see the original hotel. They built a big museum there for civil rights and tolerance, but you can still see the place where he was murdered. And they quote a beautiful pasuk just outside of his room where he was killed. They quote a beautiful pasuk. So I looked at the tombstone, you know, the stone they put there, and I was really surprised to see it is a pasuk from our parasha, this week's parasha. They said one to another, "Behold, here comes the dreamer. Let us slay him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." Our pasuk, but at the end of the day, his dreams, Baruch Hashem, are fulfilled, but also Yosef's dream, his dreams, at the end of the day, they were really mad at the beginning of the parsha when they heard the dream. At the end of the day, all the dreams were fulfilled, but in a beautiful way, of mutual brotherhood and love. Now, let's move to the shortest story of Yehuda. And I think this is like the secret part of the parasha. Usually you don't pay attention to what's going on with the tikkun of Yehuda. At the beginning, and sometimes we might be, you know, after hearing about Yosef and the love and the brothers, let's always have peace and love and tranquility, and let's always have compromises. That's so nice. Sometimes we need exactly the opposite. Yehuda, at the beginning of the parasha, saves Yosef. They want to sell him. They want to kill him. They want to kill him. And Reuven convinces them to put him in this pit. And says, I don't know what's going to happen to him there, but let's put him there with all the snakes and the scorpions. So basically, and they sit, they put him in the pit, and they sit and they eat together. And then Yehuda has this idea. מה בצע כי נהרוג את אחינו וחיסנו את דמו? לכו ונמכרנו לישמעאלים, וידנו אל תהי בו. It sounds like such a humanistic, positive suggestion, okay? What is the gain if we slay our brothers and cover up his blood? Come, let us sell him to the ישמעאלים, but our hand shall not be upon him, for he is our brother, our flesh. And they agreed. His brothers listened to his suggestion carefully and said, okay, yeah, we'll sell him to this caravan of Ishmaelim. We just see them coming. Let's sell him to them. We might think this is a beautiful compromise, okay? Yehuda saved his life. Thank you very much. Our commentators, our rabbis, our sages, they all say what he did was an awful thing to do. Everyone who blesses Yehuda for what he did curses him in a way. He is a blasphemer. He curses him. He tells, it's the opposite. I mean, you cannot bless Yehuda for what he did. That's what the Talmud tells us about this scene, you know. Think about it, okay? What kind of a compromise is it? Can you always have a compromise? No. Sometimes you have to stand up and say what we're doing is awful. We cannot sell him. Did you ask yourself? He agrees to this awful compromise, okay? He just, you know, softening his brother, compromising, you know, telling them that, no. I mean, of course it's awful, they want to kill him. But you can, there's no middle here. There's not like in the middle, you know, half a solution. Okay, we'll just sell him to the Egyptians. No, that's an awful thing to do. It's a terrible, terrible thing to do. And if you, sometimes you check yourself. If you agree to a compromise, always check. Maybe it's because you don't care enough. Because when it comes to crucial issues, no compromise is allowed, okay? You can't say this person is a moderate person. No. He's, in a way, I'm sorry for saying it, he's an evil doer. I mean, why do you give your brother to the Egyptians, okay? It's injustice toward yourself. And, okay, Shimon Levi, if you remember, Shimon Levi claimed he should be killed. Reuven plans to save him afterwards. That's what he's in the pit. But Yehuda, if you believe yourself is innocent, so take him out and save him. And if you believe he must, you know, be punished, or, you know, so you should always seek for the truth, okay? There's no place for compromises here. And from that point on, Yehuda once again also transforms, also changes in the deepest way. He has two tests, two lessons to teach us, and he changes completely. From the minute he sells Yosef to this group of Ishmaelim, we see two places, two points where he does exactly the opposite. First, of course, the mistake with Tamar. He goes to a place called Adulam, to a man called Chira, and after this sin, this mistake with Tamar, okay, he understands she's pregnant because of him. Vayaker Yehuda vayomer tzadka mimeni. Yehuda recognized the belonging that belongs to him, and he said, she is right from me. Vetzadka mimeni. She's right more than me, from me. Vetzadka mimeni. Okay, don't kill her. It's my mistake. I admit. No compromise. Nothing here is too moderate. It's very extreme, straightforward. Just the simple truth. It's me. Tzadka mimeni. My fault. She's not, it's not her fault, okay? She is right. Tzadka, okay? This readiness to pay, you know, for his mistakes, this is something new here, okay? He takes responsibility, no avoidance of responsibility. It's my full responsibility. First test. And second test, of course, leading us to the end, the exciting end of this plot, when Yosef asks Binyamin to stay with him. He is not willing to let him go. He wants Binyamin with him. Yehuda twice goes and convinces people, it's me, everything, my full responsibility. At first he goes to his father, V'omer Yehuda el Israel, Yaakov, Anochi e'arvenu, miyadi tevakshenu. I will guarantee him, from my hand you can demand him. It's me, only me, my responsibility. Look at the word arvenu, coming from the Hebrew verb phrase arev, arevut. Kol Israel arevim zed laze. Guarantee. We have mutual responsibility, a sense of responsibility toward Binyamin, toward every Jew. But then Yehuda does exactly the same when he goes to Yosef. When he convinces him, he says, take me and not Binyamin. V'ata yeshev na'avdecha. I will sit here instead of taking this boy as a slave. Take me, okay? And may the boy go up with his brothers, for how will I go up to my father if the boy is not with me? Ech e'ele el avi im ha'na'ar einenu iti. Once again, no compromises, no avoidance of responsibility. Yehuda makes, I would say, now he, after the sale of Yosef, he corrects everything. He goes exactly to the opposite direction. He agrees to be taken as a slave in place of Binyamin. And Binyamin is also innocent, just like Yosef, you know, innocent of any crime. This time Yehuda does not suggest any compromise. Maybe you'll take some other brother. Maybe we'll wait to our father. No. No compromise. When it comes to crucial issues, take me, okay? I am the person you should take. And twice we see Yosef and Yehuda, I would say, reaching higher levels, fixing, correcting this crucial sins. And twice, Yam Suf, as a response, I would say, the splitting of the Red Sea, the splitting of the way the Yam splits, it's because of these two individuals who changed their characteristics. It says, Hayam ra'a vayanos, the sea saw and fled, and, you know, changed his nature. Why? Because these two changed their nature. We see it in the Midrash twice. Once the Yam was, opened, was splitting because of Nachshon. Nachshon is Ben Aminadav, who jumped as a pioneer to the sea. He's the son of Yehuda. He's part of the tribe of Yehuda. Hayam Ravayanos. He sees someone so courageous, no compromise. Nachshon does not say, oh, someone else will jump. No, I will be the Nachshon. It's a phrase in Hebrew. Up until today, the Yam will change his nature. And once again, the Red Sea, Hayam sees it because he sees Yosef. Yosef is already buried, but he sees the coffin of Yosef. And he, once again, because Yosef changed his nature, the sea fled, the sea changes its nature. Two brothers, through a process of tikkun, I think this tikkun, once again, also the tikkun of Yehuda, is extremely, extremely important to us. And in a way, these are like two sides of the same coin, because Yosef talks about love, a dialogue, you know, mutual understanding, brotherhood. Yehuda, it's much harder. Not always can you compromise. He needs determinations. He shows us how to uncompromise in different situations, you know, have to have principles and values. And at the end of the day, there's on one hand, you know, peace, and on the other hand, truth. Peace and truth. Emet v'hashalom. Emet v'shalom ehavu. That's, you know, the conflict we still face. But in a way, these two brothers, they complete this, you know, the picture, and it gives us, I think, a lot of food for thought. I want to thank you very much. I want to wish you a happy, happy Chanukah. And I want to please beg, we will not be here next week, so please don't come next week. And you're invited really to follow. Uri, can you show this slide? This is how you can really know everything about my lectures in the state. There's Dallas, Bezrat Hashem, soon, and a lot of things, Queens in New York. So you're all welcome to be a part of this group and know where to meet me in 2 weeks, Bezrat Hashem, in the next parasha. Toda rabah, thank you very much, and Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.